Attention, Santa Fe, train number 22, the El Capitan, for Albuquerque, Dodge City, Kansas City, and Chicago, now loading at track 5 for departure at 11:30.
Columbia presents Corwin. Tonight, Norman Corwin brings you his latest play, El Capitan and the Corporal, co-starring the distinguished actress of radio, stage, and screen, Catherine Locke, and the internationally known radio actor, Joseph Julian. Music is by Alexander Semler. Catherine Locke and Joseph Julian in Norman Corwin's El Capitan and the Corporal.
Well, I had seat number 18 on this train, the El Capitan. The way I figured, it wasn't quite right for two people to have the same seat on the same train. So I said to the man who was sitting in it when I got there, "You sure you have the right seat, sir?" He looked kind of startled and said,
"Why, yes. My ticket here says seat 18, and this is 18.
Well, so does mine say 18.
Well, I guess the thing to do is to take it up with the conductor.
So we took it up with the conductor and got it straightened out. Seems he had seat number 18 in the next car. Well, I got settled in my seat. There was little time before the train started, and I was wondering who was going to sit next to me. You see, in all the times I'd been riding on trains, I never had a pretty girl sit next to me. This time was apparently no exception, because a guy came along who must have weighed 300 pounds, and he plunked down beside me. Poor fellow had been puffing and panting because he thought he was going to miss the train.
Oh, I'm winded. I'm not built for this kind of thing, as you can see.
What did you do, run up the ramp?
All the way from the street. I guess I couldn't have been looking where I was going. I went up the wrong track and found myself on the train for San Diego. Isn't that a silly thing to do?
Oh, I don't know. It's easy to make a mistake.
That ever happened to you?
No, I can't say it has.
Oh, look at this handkerchief. Ring wet. Boy, I won't catch my breath till I get to Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara? This train doesn't go to Santa Barbara.
You mean this isn't the Beaver for San Francisco?
Heck no, this is the El Capitan for Chicago.
Oh, dear. Oh, my Lord. Will you help me down with that bag?
Yeah, sure thing. I went to help the poor guy off the train. I started down the aisle, sort of running interference for him. But before I went five steps, I bumped smack into a girl.
Oh.
We collided so hard, she dropped her suitcase and almost fell over it.
Will you please watch where you're going?
Oh, I beg your pardon. She gave me a look that would wither your left arm. I said to her, "I'm just trying to help a man catch a train, that's all." She didn't answer and went by with her nose in the air. I felt like saying to her, "Don't you know there's a war on? What's the use of arguing with a dame in a situation like that?" So I tumbled off the train with this guy's suitcase. I helped him on his way. Well, I got back on the car, and who was sitting in my seat by the window but this same girl? She looked at me as though I'd just slugged her grandmother. I gave the courtesy right back to her. "I'm very sorry, miss, but you're sitting in my seat."
"You must be mistaken. This ticket says seat 18.
"But mine is 18 window. Yours is 18 aisle."
"In that case, I'll move."
"If you don't mind. I'd just like to sit in my own seat, that's all."
"Very well. Excuse it."
I moved in and sat next to the window. And the train started. She picked up a magazine and thumbed through it. Now and then looked up out of the window as we mooched along toward Pasadena. But her glance was strictly the impersonal type. Went right past me. No local stops. And after a while, I must have got interested in the pictures in her magazine, started looking at them over her shoulder, because suddenly it struck me this girl had a very interesting profile, to say the least. I was in the middle of admiring it when...
"Well?"
"Well, what?"
"What are you looking at?"
"Your nose."
"Oh. Does it meet with your approval?"
"Sure does."
"I'm so relieved."
After that, I kept pretty much to myself. Until we left San Berdu and started to climb through Cayon Pass. And then I volunteered to point out some of the features of interest. I didn't know too much about the country, but I made off like I was an authority and named a couple of mountain peaks that had been anonymous since the Mojave Indians were running the place. She paid no attention at all. Until I said to her, That one there is called Mount Glickstein.
Now, look, who do you think you're annoying? That happens to be Mount Baldy.
Oh, it is? Well, maybe you're right. It does seem unlikely they'd be naming a mountain after my commanding officer.
You know, you're the least smart Alec I've
ever... The name's Cal, not Alec.
Short for Callow, I presume?
Short for what?
Let it go.
I tried not to let it go. But she buried herself in a book. And we were past Victorville before I spoke to her again. I finally said, look, I'm sorry if I was rude. After all, I didn't intend to bump into you in the aisle. I was helping that fat man off the train. Poor fella, you know what happened to him? First he got on the train...
I'm not interested.
Well, all right. If you don't want to accept an apology, well, then... After all, if we're going to be sitting next to each other for a couple of days... She simply stared at her book and ignored me. And I shut up, feeling pretty foolish for wasting my time on a cold potato just because she happened to have a cute profile. She probably would never have spoken to me of her own accord if it hadn't been for a little accident just before we got to Barstow. It seems she wanted something in her suitcase, so she got up and reached for it in the rack.
Excuse me.
Can I help you there?
No, thank you. I can manage.
Well, she didn't manage so good because the train gave a little lurch and down went the bag on my noggin.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. Are you hurt?
Well, actually, the bump didn't hurt much at all because the grip wasn't heavy. Yet it made such a loud noise when it dropped on my head, she must have thought I was killed. I played for sympathy, naturally.
Are you all right?
Well,
Here, let me...
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm all right.
I'm so sorry. Really, I am. What's the matter? Is it bleeding?
No. The only thing I'm worried about is an old skull fracture I got 6 years ago.
Do you think you... Does it feel... Can I do anything for you?
No, I'm all right. Well, she was so scared about the idea of my having refractured my skull, which had never been fractured in the first place, and so regretful about the way she had treated me, that she just took right over. First thing I noticed, she was massaging my scalp.
Does that feel better now?
Oh, much better. You have the healing touch.
I'm sorry if I seem mean, but you must admit you were pretty fresh.
Well, I apologized, didn't I?
Yes. I should have accepted your apology. That wasn't very nice of me.
Okay, then. Are we friends?
Yes. Yes, we're friends.
The train stopped for a few minutes at Barstow, and we got out and walked around in the hot desert sun. Didn't take us long to get acquainted as to who we were and what we were doing. I found out her name was Betty Frisbee, that she worked on jigs in an aircraft factory in California, and that she was going to...
Chicago. To bring my brother back from the Marine Hospital in Marshallton.
What's he doing there?
He was badly wounded in the Merchant Marine. He got torpedoed twice, and the second time he lost an arm, and his spine was broken.
Oh, gee, that's tough. Sorry to hear it.
He'll never be able to walk again.
Terrible.
He's done a lot of fighting for a boy his age. Before he was in the Merchant Marine, he fought in Spain.
He did?
Yes, he was with the American Volunteers.
So this is really his second war, huh?
No. No, it's all one war, wouldn't you say?
Well, this one really began in 1939, and the other...
Surely by now you know better than that.
Well, I didn't follow that Spanish war very much.
Well, I did. Not only because Sandy was in it up to his neck, but I guess because my own heart was in it, too.
What's that?
Yes, let's get aboard.
Hey, this way, Betty.
No, that's not our train. That's a Union Pacific train.
Oh. If I don't watch out, I'll be doing just what that fat man did. I don't know what came over me. I'm not usually absent-minded.
Maybe it was a blow on your head.
We returned to the train and continued our talk. Betty asked a lot of questions about me.
Are you on a furlough?
No, I'm just returning from one.
Well, what happens when you get to New York?
Well, when I go to a port of embarkation.
Oh. Are you married?
No.
You got a girl?
Well, nobody I'm really in love with. How about you?
Oh, just about the same as you, I suppose.
Yeah?
Well, there's a boy at home who wants me to marry him, but I'm afraid we'd never get along.
Why?
Well, we don't agree much about the world.
About the world?
Yes. You see, to my way...
Pardon me, folks. Would you like to get in on a little game of pinochle?
No, thanks.
No?
I'm sorry. I don't play pinochle.
What did you mean? You and your friend didn't agree about the world.
Well, the way I see it, there are two main, well, let's say, points of view about being alive on this earth. Now, you're either an active human being, with all that implies, or else...
Well, wait a minute. What does that imply?
Well, it implies a certain amount of responsibility. It implies the idea of giving as well as receiving from your country.
Hello.
Well, hello.
What's your name?
Oscar Fiddlefuddle. What's yours?
Mary Lou Fraser.
Well, hello, Mary Lou. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Splendid. That's where we came in. Where's your mother, Mary Lou? Where do you live?
216 Wallace Stephen Chase, California.
Well, you better go to your mother now. You get lost. Goodbye, Mary Lou.
Bye-bye.
Now, you were saying there are two kinds of people. Active human beings and what was the other kind?
Well, for want of a better word, I'd say vegetables.
Vegetables? Well, how do you mean?
Well, I mean just people who vegetate. They're planted and they grow and... And you know just what to expect from them, and if their father was a head of lettuce, that's good enough for them, so they're a head of lettuce.
Well, now, what kind of person exactly do you mean?
Well, look, I'll give you an example. Let's take the first privilege of citizenship in a democracy.
Yeah.
Well, what is it? Do you know?
Sure. I suppose it's a free press and freedom of religion and the other...
No, no. Those are the dividends of a democracy. I'm talking about privileges.
Well, what is it then?
Well, the first privilege of a citizen in a country like ours is the right to vote.
Oh, well, of course.
Well, I call a voter who doesn't vote... Well, as far as I'm concerned, he qualifies as a vegetable.
A vegetable?
Yes, he's vegetating. Voting is the least thing you could expect him to do. Well, I mean, the least he could do is to take a slight interest in his country. Well, when you consider how many men have died just for the simple right to vote, which we take so much for granted, when you consider how little trouble it is to go to a poll, then you look around at a person who stays at home on election day and you say, there goes a cabbage. Because, well, after all, the... what's all the jollity about?
Looks to me like a wandering minstrel show. There's some soldiers and sailors on the way to the smoker, I guess.
Wait a minute. Listen. This guy says to another guy, see? He says, did you ever have an accident? So the other guy says, no, but a dog bit me once. And then the first guy says, well, wasn't that an accident? So the second guy says, hey, no, he did it on purpose.
Where were we?
I was talking about voting. You see, to me, that's only one way of expressing what I call a basic interest in being alive. Now, you can be interested or disinterested in the kind of education your children are going to get, or in the wages you'll be making after the war, or in the kind of highway the town is going to build, or in a struggle for democracy, whether it's in Spain or in your own backyard. Now, the trouble with... What are you looking at?
Your eyes. You have very beautiful eyes.
You haven't been listening to what I've been saying.
Sure. Nothing you've said so far. All is the fact that you have very beautiful eyes.
Excuse me.
Betty. Where are you going? Betty! People turned around and looked at me. I felt sort of foolish, so I stayed in my seat for a while, pretending to read. Then after a few minutes, I got up to look for Betty in the smoker. She wasn't there. I went through the train twice looking for her. Couldn't find her. So I guess she must have gone in the ladies' lounge. Well, we got to Needles, and still no Betty. So when the train stopped, I got out, hoping to find her on the platform. And sure enough, there she was at a newsstand, buying a paper. Betty! Listen, I've been looking all over for you.
Well, here I am. I'm the girl with the beautiful eyes.
Oh, cut it out, will you? You want a paper?
No, I have one, thank you. I don't suppose you ever read such things.
Nope, never.
Afraid you might find out what's going on in the world?
Oh, listen, Betty. Other people can read the news. But guys like your brother and I, we're the ones who have to go out and make it. Look, I'm not a vegetable, Betty. Honest, I'm not. Don't get mad at me. Here I am on my way to a POE, and you're going back to California with your brother. Don't you think you're being just a little...
All right, Cal.
That's all she said. She said, all right, Cal. She smiled and took my arm, and we went back on the train. Well, we got hungry around Kingman, Arizona, and went in the diner and had the 90-cent meal, which she insisted should be Dutch. We returned to our car. As we opened the door off the vestibule, we found there was a sort of concert going on. One of the passengers had unmasked the guitar. There was a whole cluster of people around him, listening in silence as the El Capitan streaked along in the night.
The thing that I did that was wrong was to keep you from the foggy, foggy do.
Well, do you know Lord Jeffrey Amherst?
Yeah, no, I don't sing college songs.
Listen, how about the Road to Mandalay?
I can sing loud enough there.
Oh, listen and keep those bottles quiet. Yeah. That's good.
No, I think I'll sing one, the favorite of my girl. It's called Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair.
Black is the color of my true love's hair. I don't know that.
Black is the color of my true love's hair.
After a while, we returned to our seats and listened from there. So the lights in the car were low now. Betty's eyes had a dark glow, which made them seem even more beautiful than ever.
What are you thinking?
Hmm? Oh, I was just thinking the place in the world for this, too.
What do you mean? For what, too?
Oh, for love. Songs about love. For singing.
I'd hate to think what the world would be without it.
Well, it's not so hard to imagine. Just look how it is in Germany. Why, love in Germany is under the control of the Nazi Party. They tell people who shall breed and who shall be sterile. I don't think it's hardly possible for a fascist to be really in love. You know that? I mean, not if he's been brought up to believe a woman belongs only in the kitchen and the nursery. Isn't that what the Japs and the Nazis think?
Yes, it is.
Betty put her head on my shoulder. After a while, she went to sleep. I took one of her hands in mine. I guess that was all right with her, because when I moved her hand, she opened one eye sleepily. The corner of her lip smiled at me. She went back to sleep. After a while, I fell asleep myself, with the guitar and the wheels still singing in my ears. The train was going through Wagon Mound, New Mexico. Betty had already eaten breakfast and was in her chair reading Strange Fruit.
Oh, are you awake?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
What time is it?
Time for you to be up and about. I've already had my breakfast.
What a woman. You always get up so early, look so pretty in the morning.
Daily, except Sunday.
You're wonderful. Excuse me while I straighten my beard off.
You're excused.
For a day that started off so good, I suffered a great many annoyances. In the first place, the car we were in got so chummy that everybody was practically sitting in our laps, including young Miss Slazak of Walnut Street, Ventura.
What's his name?
I told you yesterday, Fuddle Fuddle.
Why?
Then a girl going through to the diner spotted Betty.
Betty!
Miriam, Betty!
And how did it turn out? They were classmates in college.
Miriam, I'd like you to meet Corporal Hollister. Miriam Maislish.
How do you do, Miss Maislish?
How do you do? Betty, how are you?
They sat and gabbed for hours about their old school days. Believe me, there's nothing more boring than for a neutral party to hear about Bud Phillips, who's in the South Pacific, and Bob Lee, who's just written a book on television, and Gazella Cronkite, who married a furniture salesman from Far Rockaway.
I hear she's expecting.
No.
And Miss Maislish, of course, came along to lunch. When the train stopped at La Junta, we got out to stretch our legs. She tagged along with us. But I never really got any time alone with Betty all day. Worse than that, a fellow right in back of my chair, a music lover who should have been born a canary, started whistling and kept it up until it got on my nerves. I went into the club car to get away from him. And everybody had all the regular magazines already, so I read the Railroad Age and the Standard Book of Timetables. Dinner was even worse. Maislish was along. Not only that, but two good-looking Marines went on the make for Betty. I had all I could do to keep from taking a hand in the situation. But I curbed myself, figuring what right would I have to interfere. After all, she's not my girl. I just met her yesterday. So I took the whole thing philosophically.
What's the matter, Cal?
Oh, nothing.
You seem so glum all of a sudden.
Oh, nothing, really.
You sure?
I said I was sure, just to end that line of inquiry. But it wasn't until the latter part of the evening that I really had her to myself. And that was only because everybody began to get so fagged they couldn't keep their eyes open. We sat back in our seats, talking in a very low voice.
You tired?
A little.
So am I.
You know what?
What?
I missed you all day.
Missed me?
Yeah. Between Maislish and the Marines, I hardly got to talk to you.
Why, Cal, you sound as though that were important to you.
Well, it is.
But we only met yesterday.
I know, I know. We're not exactly engaged to each other or anything, are we?
That's right.
But would that be so bad?
Would what be so bad?
Being engaged?
That is silly, silly.
Am I? Sorry if I made a fool of myself again.
You haven't made a fool of yourself. What time is it?
11? Why?
We get to Kansas City in 15 minutes, and I want to get out there.
Yeah? What for?
Well, Sandy wrote me. He wanted me to bring him a book, and I didn't have time to get it at home. It'll be so early when we get to Chicago that I won't have time to get it before catching my connection.
What's the book he wants?
Citizen Tom Paine by Howard Fast.
Oh, yeah, I heard of that. He was quite a guy, Tom Paine, according to what Major Glickstein says.
You ought to read Paine sometime.
Jefferson, that's my boy. Well, we got to Kansas City, went up the stairs to the station, and Betty bought her book. Then we walked around outside the station to get a breath of fresh air. We stood there looking at the lights. Betty put her arm in mine. It felt to me as though it belonged there. I couldn't help thinking to myself how nice it would be if we were married and this was our honeymoon.
Cal, how long does the train stop here?
Huh? Oh, 7 minutes. It leaves at 11:22.
What time is it now?
Holy smokes, 11:21. We only got 1 minute.
We'd better run for it. What track is it on?
I think it's track four.
Well, don't you know?
I'm pretty sure it's four.
Well, here's the staircase down to track four. I hope you're ready.
Porter, is this the El Capitan?
No, sir. This is a westbound train.
What track is the El Capitan on?
I don't know.
Come on, let's go back upstairs. Hey, mister, which is the stairway for the El Capitan?
Sorry, I don't know. Ask the conductor at the train gate.
What train gate?
Right there.
Are you waiting here, honey? I'll ask the conductor.
Hey, what track is Capitan on?
On
6, I believe.
No, I think it's on 7 tonight.
Well, I believe
you missed it anyway.
11:25.
Oh, great. Well,
try 7, okay?
That's okay.
Did you find out?
Yes, 7.
Hey, Porter, what train is this?
El Capitan
eastbound.
Oh, thank goodness.
We staggered on our car, winded and disheveled. And thank our stars, the train hadn't pulled out on time. But to top it all, that train just stood there another 20 minutes. So we'd given ourselves a scare and a workout for nothing. Well, it was about midnight when the train got underway. And we were pretty tired. And Betty slumped down and put her head on my shoulder and went off to sleep. She looked so pretty with her head on my shoulder and her hair smelled kind of nice, you know. I guess I felt pretty sentimental toward her. Although it was true, we had only met yesterday. I stayed awake for quite a while. Then I must have dozed off because the next thing I knew, I was suddenly aware that light was just beginning to come up in the east. The train was slowing down to go through Streeter, Illinois. The car was quiet. I looked at Betty to see how she was doing. To my surprise, I found she was wide awake. She was looking at me out of those big eyes.
Good morning, Corporal.
Good morning, Betty. Don't you sleep?
I slept some. I've been thinking a lot.
So have I.
About what?
About you.
What about me?
Sorry we're not going on together after Chicago.
Want to know something?
What?
So am I.
Are you, Betty?
Yes. I like you.
I squeezed her hand a little. Sat there without saying anything. Just watching the sky go from purple to pink. Finally, I said to her, Betty.
What?
I'd like to ask just one thing before we get to Chicago. Because I know you'll have to rush to make your connections.
What is it, Cal?
Can I kiss you just once? She looked at me for a moment without saying anything. Then she put her hand under my chin and drew me toward her, and she kissed me. Well, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but all kinds of things suddenly began singing in my head. Lines of poems I learned in school and thought I'd forgotten, and there was a kind of music, too. And all the time the dawn was coming up in the east, and there was a glow outside that seemed to go along with the glow inside me. I couldn't really trust my Adam's apple for a while, so I didn't say anything.
Do you think you'll remember me after today?
Well, I don't know about after the war, but that kiss will carry me through the duration.
You're a sweet boy, Cal. I suppose it's silly in war to say, take care of yourself to a soldier, but, well, I guess it's more or less in the hands of God, isn't it?
God and Major Glickstein.
Nevertheless, you be careful.
I'm coming back, Betty. You know who I'd like to see first, right? I step off the boat? You.
Oh, I'm glad you feel that way. I really am.
Just you don't go getting yourself hitched to some vegetable before you give me a chance, now, will you?
Oh, don't worry.
Betty, if I write, will you answer me?
Of course I'd answer you.
But you haven't told me your...
Hi, good morning, folks. Greetings and salutations.
Good morning, Miriam.
Good morning.
Well, we get in 10 minutes. You got all your stuff together, Corporal?
Yeah.
How much time do you got to get over to the other station, Betty?
Half hour.
None too much.
No.
Oh, look, isn't this a cute kid? Good morning, young lady. Isn't she cute?
Hello.
My name is Fiddlefuddle. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Chicago. Please make sure you've left nothing behind.
We got off the train, and I helped Betty with her bags. And on the sidewalk there in front of the Dearborn station, I said goodbye to her.
Goodbye, Cal. Good luck. Come back.
Goodbye, Betty.
Tell your brother Sandy I'm going over there and avenge that lost arm. Tell him I'm going to help finish that job he started in Spain. And tell him I love his sister.
I'll tell him all that. Goodbye, dear.
She smacked me right on the lips. Turned and ran and got into a taxi and disappeared inside. I stood there, rooted to the intersection of Polk and Dearborn Streets, looking after her. And it must have been all of 5 minutes later, with me in a perfect daze all this time, that I realized with a sinking feeling that I hadn't given her my address and I didn't have hers either. I started to run automatically in the direction the taxi had gone. But I stopped after a few steps because I knew that was silly. And then, while I was still wondering what to do, I looked down in my hand. And there was a piece of paper. A plain white piece of paper with some writing on it. So help me, I don't remember how it got there. But she must have put it in my hand when she kissed me goodbye, and I was too dumbstruck to notice it. It said,
Betty Frisbee, 7692 North Elmwood Drive, Long Beach, California. At home, after the armistice.
I put it in my breast pocket and started for the train that would take me to Long Beach, via Germany.
You've been listening to Catherine Locke and Joseph Julian in El Capitan and the Corporal, a new play written, directed, and produced by Norman Cohen as the 19th in his current series for CBS. Others in the cast were Minerva Pius, Burl Ives, Paul Mann, Kermit Murdoch, Cecil Roy, Bob Dryden, and Sam Raskin. Music was by Alexander Semler. Next week at this time, Columbia presents Cohen in another unique radio program. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WBNS Columbus.